former President Ronald Reagan, often cited as having transformed the Republican Party. As we look back at the 1990s following his presidency, we do begin to see a switch in conservative politics and ideologies, often toward a more far-right approach. One historian joins us now to talk about how Reagan, among other politicians, reshaped politics as we know them today. And, of course, we'd invite you to join our conversation at any point. Call us 1-800-642-1234. Did you vote for Reagan in the 90s? Do you still vote Republican? And did Reagan change your political affiliation? You think there's too big of a divide in politics today? 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Our guest, Nicole Hemmer, an associate professor of history at Vanderbilt University who specializes in media, conservatism, and the far right. Her most recent book is Partisans, The Conservative Revolutionaries Who Remade American Politics in the 1990s. Nicole, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me, Lee.
Yeah, let's start with Ronald Reagan. And as you retell the history of the Republican Party through the 1990s, where do we start? Does it start with Ronald Reagan, or is Ronald Reagan a bookend of a previous chapter? How does he fit in your history?
So in many ways, people understand Reagan as the start of something new. He was the first popular landslide winning conservative president to win in the second half of the 20th century. But what I talk about in the book is the way that Reagan was fundamentally a Cold War president. He was somebody for whom the logic of the Cold War really shaped his politics, his rhetoric, his policies. And when the Cold War came to an end in the late 1980s and the early 1990s, it created this space for a new, more pessimistic, less popular, more antagonistic conservatism to emerge. And that's what we see happen, is the rise of this sort of old new right that has its roots in the 1930s and 40s, but is very modern in terms of things like its use of media.
Well, and the term that comes back from the 30s and 40s that we heard in the elections in the last few years would be America First.
That's right. That's something that Pat Buchanan, who was a Republican presidential candidate in 1992 and 96, and then runs on the reform ticket in 2000, he brings that idea of America First back in his 1992 campaign. He actually writes members of the old American First Committee, this group that opposed U.S. intervention in World War II, and says, hey, I want to bring back this foreign policy that says the U.S. should not get involved in foreign entanglements, that we should be focused more on home. So it's a much more nationalistic kind of fortress America view of what the nation should be.
And Nicole, as you write in your new book, Partisans, that this America First is not anything new, but at the same time, there is the running theme of Pat Buchanan through the history of the Republican Party before the 1990s, going back to the Nixon administration, and using these phrases that would be co-opted by Donald Trump as he ran for president.
That's right. Pat Buchanan is such a fascinating figure. As you mentioned, he comes up through the Nixon administration when he was still in his 20s. He joins Richard Nixon. And at the time, he is a representative of the conservative movement in an administration that was like interested in the conservative movement, but not necessarily as far to the right as conservatives would have preferred. And so as Republican presidents get increasingly conservative, Pat Buchanan actually gets increasingly conservative as well. And he emerges in 1992 to fill what he called the political vacuum in American politics, which he saw as the space to the right of Ronald Reagan.
And Nicole Hemmer, our guest, and join us at any point, 800-642-1234. But as you write in Partisans, that Reagan Republicanism was largely a response to the Cold War and a reaction to communism and a stand against the former Soviet Union. But after the end of the Cold War, after the breakup of the Soviet Union, there was a question about what this sort of what the Republican Party would stand for and what it would be about. As we get to the 2000s, past the 1990s, how do you see the Republican Party's platform playing out after the Cold War?
So after the Cold War, particularly in the 2000s, you kind of have a Reaganism revival. People often forget this, but when George W. Bush won the election in 2000 when he becomes president, he's seen as the heir not of George H.W. Bush, but of Ronald Reagan, his compassionate conservatism, as he liked to call it, his approach to immigration reform after the 9/11 attacks, his use of democracy as the language that was shaping his foreign policy rhetoric. All of these things reminded people of Ronald Reagan. But over the course of his presidency, you know, the democracy promotion abroad leads to the debacles in Iraq and Afghanistan. The tax cuts and deregulation help contribute to the global financial collapse. The idea that government doesn't have a role to play is really brought into question after Hurricane Katrina. And so because of the failures of the second Bush administration, you see an even bigger space for this new post-Cold War right to emerge. And that's what you see in the 20-teens with the Tea Party first and then with the rise of Donald Trump.
I have to ask, Nicole Hemmer, what role did the Democratic Party play in all this during the 1990s as you had triangulation from President Clinton, who was to some degree co-opting some conservative priorities in order to get something done during his administration? What did this do to the GOP?
Oh, it's absolutely fascinating because you're exactly right. In the 1990s, the Democratic Party really does move to the right. You see this on things like immigration. You have harsher immigration restrictions under Bill Clinton. You have people like Dianne Feinstein in California pushing for more immigration restriction. And instead of creating a kind of middle ground where Republicans and Democrats meet and come up with bipartisan legislation, what you tend to see more often is the Republican Party moving even further to the right in order to make sure that the distinctions between Democrats and Republicans remain stark. And so it has this, I think, unexpected effect of helping to push the Republican Party even further to the right in the 1990s.
1-800-642-1234. If you have questions for our guest, Nicole Hemmer, Associate Professor of History at Vanderbilt University and author of the new book, Partisans, the Conservative Revolutionaries Who Remade American Politics in the 1990s. And your previous book, if I'm not mistaken, Nicole, was about the conservative media, Messengers of the Right, Conservative Media and the Transformation of American Politics. When does Rush Limbaugh show up on the scene? Because for some, it would seem like he'd always been there, but he was part of the 1990 conservative movement as well, wasn't he?
He was. So that first book that I wrote, Messengers of the Right, really looked at the role that conservative media activists played during the Cold War era. Mm. And in Partisans, I look at this second generation of conservative media activists. And of course, one of those, as you mentioned, is Rush Limbaugh. His radio show goes national in 1988. And he really does fill what conservatives see as a vacuum in the wake of the Reagan administration. In fact, in 1992, after George H.W. Bush loses his reelection, Ronald Reagan writes a letter to Rush Limbaugh that says, "You are now the number one voice of conservatism in the United States." And that's the way that Limbaugh is treated, as a kind of avatar for the conservative base. During the 92 election, when Bush is not doing great in the polls, he actually invites Rush Limbaugh to the White House in order to win him over so that Rush Limbaugh will say nice things about him and hopefully bring conservatives along and make them more excited. So what you see first in Limbaugh and then in other pundits and eventually the rise of Fox News is a conservative media apparatus that is growing more and more powerful and that politicians feel they have to win over in order to win elections. That's something that's very new in the 1990s.
And as you detail in Partisans, it's Roger Ailes, late Roger Ailes, formerly of Fox News, who is cutting his teeth on TV, conservative TV media, with Rush Limbaugh, as he briefly had a TV show there. I think, was that the early 90s?
That was the early 90s as well. So in 1992, when Rush Limbaugh really is at the height of his new influence, he has just written two best-selling books, and Ailes decides to pick him up for a syndicated evening television show. And it does fairly well. It plays across the country for about 4 years, and Ailes will leave that project in 1996 to go and to start Fox News. But he was absolutely instrumental in arranging things like that visit to the Bush White House, because of course, Ailes had been a Republican consultant from the Nixon era on through George H.W. Bush.
Nicole Hemmer, our guest, associate professor of history at Vanderbilt University, also a political historian who specializes in media, conservatism, and the far right. Nicole has written the books Messengers of the Right, Conservative Media, and the Transformation of American Politics, and most recently, Partisans, the conservative revolutionaries who remade American politics in the 1990s. Want to hear what you think at 1-800-642-1234. With the outsized role of Pat Buchanan or the lasting legacy of Ronald Reagan, how do you see where the GOP stands today, and can you draw a line back through history to help explain where we are today, as opposed to some who would say that Donald Trump was an anomaly or an outsider or an outlier? There's an argument to be made. It's part of the same language that at least Pat Buchanan used back when he was running for president in the early 90s on the Republican ticket. Tell us what you think, 1-800-642-1234, or email us anytime, ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue our conversation with Nicole Hemmer next on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we continue our talk with Nikki Hemmer, associate professor of history at Vanderbilt University, talking with us about her new book, Partisans, in which we're diving into how conservative politics in the 90s reshaped the Republican Party that we know today. And you can join us at any point, 1-800-642-1234. Did Republican tactics or strategy from the 1990s convince you to vote Republican or Democrat? Do you think the Conservative Party is too far right from what it used to be or should be? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's turn now to Jeff in Superior, who joins us. Jeff, you're on the air with Nicole Hemmer.
Good afternoon. Before Reagan was elected president, he lived through an era where you had Robert Byrd, who was a conservative Democrat, and Barry Goldwater, who was a conservative Republican. And Ronald Reagan was a Democrat who became a Republican because he had a desire to put America on a kind of a mainstream course between those two extremes. Robert Byrd was a racist. Blair Goldwater was, you know, a little loose with the military. And I think Ronald Reagan really set the pace, and that's why he won with such a landslide, was that he believed that government was there to protect us from each other. I heard him actually say that at a speech. And he believed that America was going to survive the extremes.
Jeff, I appreciate that. And Nicole Hemmer, you certainly write about this in your new book, Partisans.
That's right. Yes. One of the things that made Reagan in many ways singular in the 1980s, you know, you mentioned Barry Goldwater, and Barry Goldwater was somebody who had the same set of conservative ideas, but he couldn't make them popular. In 1964, when he ran for president, he lost in one of the biggest landslides in American history. And so what was so important about Reagan was he kind of cracked the code for how to sell conservatism to voters in a way that made it popular and actually expanded the voting base of the Republican Party. This is the era in which you hear about the Reagan Democrat. And that really does hold throughout the 1980s. And it comes apart pretty quickly by the time that you get to the 1990s. You find Republicans and conservatives holding on to a smaller and smaller share of the electorate. And so that's part of what I talk about in Partisans, how they lose their grip on that very popular conservatism of Ronald Reagan.
1-800-642-1234 to join the conversation with Associate Professor of History at Vanderbilt University, Nicole Hemmer, whose new book is Partisans. Let's turn now to Steve in Sun Prairie. Steve, you're on Central Time. Good afternoon.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. You know, I'm 50 years old, and in my lifetime, what I've seen is the media continue to move further and further and further to the left. So when you talk about activist, you know, media, you can put NPR as an activist media. And so what these other people found, the Rush Limbaughs, the Mark Bellings of the world, Fox News, there was a place where conservatives' voice could be heard and not be judged. And I wanted to know what the guests' thoughts on it. It's not so much these people are an issue. It's the fact that the media, such as NPR, have become activists, and so they created an opening for other players.
Steve, thank you. And as you mentioned this, I'm thinking about our conversation, Nicole, of the Democratic Party and Republican Party both moving towards the right in the 90s. So if everything else stayed in the middle, it could feel like it was moving to the left. As you look at it, the media landscape had a void that certainly was filled by Fox News and Rush Limbaugh. But has the media become more liberal?
Well, so it's really interesting to look at non-conservative media in the 1990s, because we think about Limbaugh, we think about Fox News as kind of the breeding grounds for conservative media. But actually, somebody like Pat Buchanan came up through PBS's The McLaughlin Group and CNN's Crossfire. People like Laura Ingraham and Ann Coulter got their start on MSNBC. And what you had in the 1990s as you started to get cable news and a broader range of options as more and more Americans got cable and then the internet, is that a lot of non-conservative outlets were actually the places where conservative punditry was being born. But as you go forward into the 2000s, into the 20-teens, that begins to separate out more, that eventually you see these conservative pundits on CNN and MSNBC ultimately are going to find a home on Fox News. And what's left behind are people who aren't conservative. And so you do get something shaking out there when it comes to the different different cable news outlets and different radio outlets. There is something that conservatives were responding to in the media landscape, but they had been responding to it not since the early 1990s, but since like the early 1950s when National Review began as a conservative magazine in 1955. It was making the exact same case that the media are too liberal and that there need to be a space for conservative voices. And so this is part of what is now, you know, a 70-year project to create this conservative media infrastructure.
Interesting, Nicole, that we're talking about the history of the Republican Party, your book Partisans, and the Republicans who remade American politics in the 1990s. And our callers are talking about the media this afternoon. Let's turn now to Steve and Stevens Point, who joins us along with our guest, Nicole Hemmer. Steve, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I was just wondering what your guest thought was the influence of political satirists like Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert and Bill Maher, and what the reaction of the Republican Party was to that political satire.
Steve, thank you. And you talk about Bill Maher and Politically Incorrect in your book Partisans.
This is such a great question. Yes, I talk about Bill Maher's Politically Incorrect because it was emblematic of a change that was happening in political media. And that is, the walls between news and entertainment were thinning so much that, you know, by the end of the 1990s into the 2000s, they were mostly non-existent. And Bill Maher's Politically Incorrect is so interesting because it would eventually end up on ABC because it was so popular. But it started off on Comedy Central. And it was the place where, in particular, conservatives hung out with actors and comedians and learned to be outrageous and funny in that setting on Bill Maher's show. Now, Bill Maher, as I mentioned, he moves to ABC in 1997. Comedy Central had really found a niche with Bill Maher, and they wanted more programming that blended politics and comedy. And that's where you get The Daily Show. That's where you get eventually the Colbert Report. And so in many ways, Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert are the heirs of this change that was happening in the 1990s. And Bill Maher really was the leader of a lot of that change.
Nicole Hemmer, Associate Professor of History at Vanderbilt University and author of the new book Partisans, our guest. Let's go to Ben in Milwaukee now. Ben, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Another caller brought up Reagan and the different politics going on back then. And it made me think of something in my question to Mrs. Hemmers. If you think that losing the fairness doctrine gave, you know, let the guardrails down and gave rise to a more partisan landscape. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. The fairness doctrine made sure that there was a balance and equity in reporting both sides. But as that went away, was that the vacuum that allowed conservative media to grow?
So it was part of the vacuum that allowed conservative media to grow. That regulatory change happens in 1987, where under the Reagan administration, the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, gets rid of the fairness doctrine. And at the time, you actually have people like Newt Gingrich and Trent Lott and Phyllis Schlafly, these conservative activists and office holders, who are like, actually, we want the fairness doctrine to be put back in place. Because by that point, there were a lot of conservatives who saw the fairness doctrine, to the point of an earlier caller, as a way of balancing out liberal media bias. right? That you could use the fairness doctrine to say that conservatives deserved more of a say on air. It's really not until the rise of Rush Limbaugh, until he becomes this powerful figure, that conservatives are like, actually, you know what? You don't need the fairness doctrine. But I say only partially because you also needed a number of technological changes to happen to allow conservative media to flourish in the ways that it did. And I think it's the combination of the changes in regulation and technology that make it possible for conservative media to flourish in the 1990s and beyond.
Well, was it the Clinton signing of the Telecommunications Act of 1996 that led to Rush Limbaugh being on over 400 stations nationwide and found just about anywhere?
So that deregulation makes a huge difference, as does, of course, technologically, the rise of the internet. So there's so much stuff that's happening on both the regulatory and technology front in this period.
We are woefully short of time, Nicole Hammer, but you end your book talking about pitchfork politics, and pitchforks and torches have made, at least verbally, an entrance into the Senate race here in Wisconsin. Can you explain what this is for us?
Sure. So pitchfork politics are this idea of, in many ways, like the people revolting. That was the image that Pat Buchanan tapped into in his 92 and his 96 campaign, that it was time to overthrow the establishment. And it's that same kind of anti-establishment politics that you're seeing there in Wisconsin, but that we're seeing across the United States as well.
Nicole Hammer, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Nicole's an associate professor of history at Vanderbilt University, and she specializes in media, conservatism, and the far right, joining us to talk about her most recent book, Partisans, The Conservative Revolutionaries Who Remade American Politics in the 1990s.